Welcome to the 2009 MSF Frontline Reports podcast. Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, is an independent medical humanitarian aid organization. I'm Avril Benoit. This month, new challenges in the fight against HIV/AIDS threaten progress made in developing countries.
We start to see now young women to whom we said those tablets will save your life, and actually who are now resistant to second line. And we are obliged to tell them there is no option for you anymore.
Also, a report from Ingushetia in the Russian Federation, where MSF offers psychosocial counseling to people living in a heightened state of fear.
They are subjected to continuous violence through a cycle of attacks and counterattacks from the different warring parties in the conflict.
But first, this month's emergency updates from some of MSF's projects around the world. People in several parts of Northern Democratic Republic of Congo and in southern Sudan continue to suffer violent attacks by the Lord's Resistance Army, the LRA. A joint military offensive against the LRA by the national armies of Uganda, DRC, and South Sudan has sparked reprisal attacks against civilians. The rebel group has been burning villages to the ground, killing people with machetes, abducting women and children. Bruno Yokum, an MSF operations director, described the situation on a U.S. news program, The Leonard Lopate Show.
Civilians are today going in all directions, trying to flee the areas where they're insecure. Most of them are going inside Congo, of course, but others going to the Central African Republic and to Sudan. It's basically a situation which is spiraling out of control, and which is becoming a regional conflict.
Tens of thousands of Congolese refugees have fled to border states in southern Sudan, but the LRA is there too. Their attacks have also displaced thousands of Sudanese. MSF is working in these areas, providing medical and psychosocial care for thousands of people. On August 7th, there was a bomb blast on the outskirts of Mosul in northern Iraq. A hospital in the area asked MSF for some badly needed medical supplies. It had exhausted its stocks looking after the high number of wounded. MSF immediately came through with surgical materials, catheters, drains, and other supplies. MSF also supplied kits to treat up to 100 burn victims. 3 days later, MSF delivered medical supplies to a different hospital in the area after more bomb blasts outside of Mosul. The security situation in Iraq prohibits MSF from working directly in its war zones, but teams support hospitals in those areas from its bases in Amman, Jordan, and the Kurdish provinces in the north. Since the first outbreak of H1N1 in Mexico this year, the flu virus has spread to all continents. Some epidemiologists predict that 30% of the world's population will contract the virus, with a death ratio of 1 in 1,000. A vaccine is still in development. It'll likely be in production in the fall. Dr. Christophe Fournier, president of MSF's International Council, says that need should drive the treatment strategy.
So to ensure success, the strategy must be to identify and treat severe cases in particular to reduce the number of deaths as far as possible.
Unfortunately, the current approach is based on purchasing power, not medical strategy. Wealthy countries have already bought up to 90% of the vaccines that'll be produced this year. That leaves only 10% for developing countries, which will probably only be able to vaccinate their healthcare workers. MSF will assist those countries with the most fragile health systems. It's been 6 months since an unprecedented cholera outbreak caused 4,000 deaths in Zimbabwe, and MSF treated more than 56,000 cholera patients. Rian van der Braak, MSF's head of mission there, said in an interview this month that although the cholera has died down, the possibility for another outbreak looms. The dilapidated water and sewage systems of Zimbabwe were the root causes of the outbreak. They haven't been adequately fixed. MSF is also concerned about the country's massive HIV/AIDS epidemic. Every day, 400 people die of AIDS-related causes in Zimbabwe. The average life expectancy there is just 34 years. Although Zimbabwe's political and economic situation has begun to stabilize somewhat in the last 6 months, the health system and services such as water and sanitation are still in dire need of repair. And that's a recap of our emergency updates. For more information on any of these stories and to hear the full interview with Bruno Yokum on MSF's response to the violence in DR Congo and in southern Sudan, please visit the MSF websites. Back in 2005, the G8 countries set a goal: universal access to AIDS treatment by 2010. But with only a few months left to meet that target, more than 60% of those still in need still have no access to antiretroviral treatment. New challenges have emerged as well. Some patients have developed drug resistance and need to be switched to new drug regimens. But the newer medicines are much more expensive and consequently out of reach. MSF spoke about this at the International AIDS Society conference in Cape Town in July. MSF's Stephen Figge has more.
Eric Gomer helped set up a groundbreaking treatment program for people living with HIV/AIDS in Khayelitsha, South Africa, 9 years ago. At the time, many people were saying that treating AIDS in Africa was not even possible. Gomer, who is MSF's medical coordinator in South Africa, explains how.
What's unique, I think, is that we brought what was considered as a sophisticated treatment, only meant to be handled by specialists, we brought it to primary health care, where the majority of sick people lived. We simplified so that nurses could handle it. And last but not least, we knocked the price down because prices were a major barrier.
Today, there are new challenges for Gomer and his team. 1 in 6 patients in the Khayelitsha program have developed resistance to their first regimen of HIV drugs after 5 years. The team is also seeing some patients, like Namafu Boy, experience problems with the medicines they've been switched to after the first regimen failed. Boy first started on antiretroviral drugs, or ARVs, back in 2004. Her first drugs eventually failed, and last year she began a secondary drug regimen.
I'm afraid then, because I think the ARVs are not working now. And then, okay, I'm going to the second line. There are problems. I think it is not working still. My weight is not right. I'm so worried.
More and more patients in Khayelitsha share Namafu Boy's experience because drug resistance inevitably occurs in long-term ARV treatment. A quarter of those who switched to a second drug regimen failed on their new treatment within 2 years. This happens everywhere, and in the U.S. and other wealthier countries, an array of alternatives are available. But in Khayelitsha, patients like Namafu have no alternatives. This situation is not confined to South Africa. Gomer says unless something is done, patients with HIV throughout Africa will be right back on AIDS death row.
We start to see now young women to whom we said those tablets will save your life and actually who are now resistant to second line. And we are obliged to tell them there is no option for you anymore. I think as a clinician this is absolutely unacceptable. The commitment was to accompany them as long as we could and as long as they were alive and to say to a patient who is still very well, sorry, but we have no option now. It's absolutely unacceptable.
At this year's International AIDS Society conference, the conference halls were filled with glossy pharmaceutical company kiosks showcasing their newest and most advanced products. Many of these have been available for some time in North America and Europe, but the terrible irony is that none of these drugs are available in the public sector in Africa, not least because of their astronomical price tag. During one session of the conference, which attracted around 5,000 scientists, clinicians, and public health experts, Eric Gomer spoke about this huge divide.
A lot of new drugs out there in the United States, they estimate today someone 20 years old diagnosed with HIV, his survival will be, as an average, 69 years. 69 years, and we, after 5 years, we start to see our mortality curve suddenly going up. Why should we go back into that divide between a first world and the reality we are facing?
The major hurdle to continuing care for patients with HIV is the cost of newer drugs. Unlike older drugs, newer ones are patented. This prevents generic producers from providing developing countries with low-cost versions of the drugs. Tito von Schoen-Angerer, director of MSF's Access to Essential Medicines campaign, says that overcoming these price barriers demands the use of laws to break patents, as well as more creative solutions. One solution is the creation of so-called patent pools, which he described to delegates at the Cape Town conference.
It's a mechanism where different drug companies can put their patent voluntary in this pool, and then any generic company that wants to produce it goes to the pool and say, well, I want to produce A and B. Can you give it to me? Now, then they have to pay a royalty and then they can do it. We very strongly call on all the drug companies to put their patents for the new medicines in the pool.
It's clear that the battle for long-term survival for people living with HIV/AIDS in Africa is only just beginning. People like Dembisa, a patient from Khayelitsha who has also failed on her second treatment, are waiting for answers, but they don't have much time.
It's no such a thing as can help me. I know that I'm going to die. Who's going to look after my children? If they can give us in South Africa the third line, another line, so that we can be again strong people.
Go to MSF's websites to read the new report, HIV/AIDS Treatment in Developing Countries, The Battle for Long-Term Survival Has Just Begun. And for our final story, we go to Ingushetia, a small republic in the North Caucasus region of the Russian Federation. It borders Chechnya in the east, Georgia in the south, and North Ossetia in the west. With few natural resources and unemployment around 70%, the future there looks bleak. Over the last 2 years, the situation has deteriorated. Recent news reports of murders and attacks on government officials and other prominent figures in the region have drawn the attention of the international community. And this spike in violence is having a deep impact on the lives of ordinary people. MSF works in 3 hospitals and 6 medical facilities, offering psychological and social counseling amid this climate of fear. MSF's Maria Borshova traveled to Ingushetia, and she files this report.
This is the story of a patient injured by a car bomb in Ingushetia. It's told by Marieta Gudieva, who manages MSF mental health program here.
A 24-year-old woman was going to work in a car with her husband and baby twins. Suddenly an explosion occurred. Her husband died instantly. She was injured and the baby survived. It's been 2 months already, but she's still in severe emotional state. Our counselors are providing assistance to her.
Stories like these are frequent in Ingushetia, yet they go largely unnoticed by the outside world. MSF is one of the few international organizations still working in this part of the Russian Federation and witnessing this everyday suffering of the population. During my visit to Ingushetia in July, I spoke with MSF head of mission William de Jonge, who gave some context to the situation.
Well, the steady deterioration of the situation in Ingushetia over the past few years has been very noticeable for those living and working there. Neighboring Chechnya seems to be stabilizing slowly after 2 brutal wars. The insurgency, however, has spread from Chechnya throughout the entire North Caucasus, in particular affecting Dagestan and Ingushetia. The increase in activity by the insurgents in Ingushetia has led to a large-scale response from local and federal authorities.
Ongoing fighting between insurgents and authorities has escalated in the last few months. In June, the president of Ingushetia, Yunusbek Yevkurov, was attacked. But the targets have not been limited to authority figures and rebels.
As so often is the case, the population itself has become the innocent victim. They are subjected to continuous violence through a cycle of attacks and counterattacks from the different warring parties in the conflict.
In a displaced person's settlement called Angusht, located in Nazrain, former capital and the Republican center, MSF runs a medical clinic. It is a bright blue building comprised of 4 box tents in the middle of the settlement, a plain and dusty wasteland. There are 4 medical rooms in this clinic, one for the therapist, the pediatrician, the gynecologist, and the mental health counselor. The latter has a separate entrance onto the street. Madina, an Ingush MSF counselor, gives an example of how the anxiety and fear from continuous violence has affected people's behavior.
Here, and it was the same in Chechnya during war, there are many people who go to sleep dressed. They don't change into pajamas because you never know what will happen to you at night. And how can you go out undressed? Our culture does not permit that.
Over the last 2 years, MSF has seen number of mental health consultations more than double to almost 1,600 in May 2009. In these, the proportion of violence-related consultations has also grown to approximately 80%. Those who have suffered from the violence live with uncertainty, anxiety, and sadness. Those who have not suffered directly know people who have and fear for their own future. Young people are the most affected, says Marieta Gudieva, and among them, feelings of distrust and insecurity prevail.
In English society, there have traditionally existed strong coping mechanisms like family ties, friendship, religion, but nevertheless today, we see people come to our councils in search of confidential, neutral, unbiased assistance. In this difficult situation, the most important thing for our clients is to speak out their problem and to be heard.
It is important that people know about the consequences of the ongoing violence in Ingushetia. It is having a paralyzing effect on the population, for whom functioning normally in society is becoming more and more difficult, with fear and anxiety dominating their lives.
That was Maria Borshova. MSF programs in Ingushetia and Chechnya provide primary and mother and child health care and treatment for tuberculosis in addition to mental health support. For more information about MSF activities and for updates on underreported humanitarian emergencies, please visit our websites, msf.org or doctorswithoutborders.org. Thank you for listening to this edition of MSF Frontline Reports. Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, is an independent medical humanitarian aid organization that delivers emergency assistance to people affected by wars, epidemics, and natural or man-made disasters in more than 60 countries around the world.